broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
A very happy Wednesday morning, everyone out there on Sports 360 AZ. The Brad Sussman Show here on this February... it's May. I walked outside and I swore it was February. These last few days, you gotta love it though, am I right? Like, it's supposed to be 110. I walk outside, it's mid-60s. I'm like, man, I can get used to this in May. Because we all know, give it a month and it's 120. Joe, people don't understand, I think, across the nation, when it comes to Arizona, yeah, our winters are 60 degrees and people don't think that's a big deal. Let me put it to you this way. Our peak is 120. Our highs in the winter are about 60. That's a 60-degree swing, guys. So, consider if you're from, like, Montana and it's 80 degrees outside, that's going from 80 to 20. That's the exact same thing. That's why we don't like cold weather here in Arizona. And that's why I don't understand people who want to leave Arizona so bad from Arizona. I'm like, do you know what it's like out there? In summer, it's like 80 degrees. You can't live there. Anyway, I'm your host, Devin Henry, here as we get off on this tirade of weather. It is beautiful outside. I have an event that I'm going to tonight to go check out some great athletes who are participating in... Let me get the actual name of it because it's actually a very amazing event that's going on. It's the Desert Challenge Games held by Arizona Disabled Sports, where I don't want to call them disabled because these guys are more athletic than I will ever be in my entire life, doing a variety of events from visual impairment to physical impairment, mental impairment, everything. These guys are going out. It's a week-long event. We're going to have some information up on Sports360AZ on these incredible athletes who are doing extremely incredible things, whether it be at the archery range, the track field, the track. They're all doing phenomenal things. It's great weather right now, actually, so it's a very nice time of year to have this apparently in the middle of May. Nonetheless, let's get into our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance. Give our guys a call at life at Sagicor. And then that includes Brad Sussman, who is actually a part of Sagicor. Wayne got his license with Sagicor. They're not going to shoot you wrong. You can just call. Try to figure things out. Make sure everything is taken care of. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Memorial Day weekend, for those of you guys who know me, knows that I know for a fact the Indy 500 is this weekend, as well as the Coke 600 and NASCAR. We're going to talk about all that, and if you guys don't follow racing, I don't blame you guys. We all have different sports that we love. Mine happens to be motorsports, but the Indy 500 is almost a fad. People want to know about the Indy 500. They'll watch it. They'll go to it without knowing anything about IndyCar. I will give you a driver who has been very good this weekend, who is someone who you're really going to want to support in this race if you don't have a dog in the hunt. Also talking NASCAR, Corey LaJoie, the driver of the number 32 Go Fast Racing Ford Mustang, will be with us. He's carrying the name of Staff Sergeant Alex Conrad, who lost his life in battle back in 2018. He is a Hamilton High School alum from Chandler, Arizona. He will be on the windshield in this Coke 600 weekend of Corey LaJoie's car. We'll talk to Corey about that and much more in his season in 2019. Also, ESPN play-by-play announcer on the radio, Adam Amin, will join the show. We are going to ask him, how do you beat the Golden State Warriors? Because no one has figured it out. Adam Amin has been following this team very closely. Maybe he has figured it out. Also, we're talking about softball coming up next in the show. But for now, I do want to talk the Arizona Diamondbacks, the only team, you know, in season right now. So far, so all right, I guess you could say. I'm not going to say that they're having a bad season, because I think that that's a ridiculous overstatement of thinking that this team was going to be a Dodgers type of team winning games like that. They're not going to. They weren't expected to. They were expected to be non-contenders in a rebuilding year. Then you look at what they have done to start off this season. Yeah, they're hovering around 500. But you got to look at what those wins and what those losses were. The overwhelming majority of who the Arizona Diamondbacks have played this season have been over 500. If you go through the first 45 games of this 2019 season, 39 games against teams over 500, 6 games against teams under 500, one of the most difficult schedules in the MLB for a team who's not supposed to be doing well this year. Then, directly after those stats came out and was recognized from CBS Sports, course, the D-backs go on a four-game skid. Two games against the Giants and two games against the Padres. They play the Pods once again today, give or take 2.5 hours or so. So, these are games that you don't want to be losing, even this early in the season. Two games against the Padres, two games against the Giants. You will once again be taking on the Giants on the road for a three-game series coming up directly after the Padres, Friday through Sunday, then another NL West opponent in the Rockies. In my mind, you have to win these games. You have to win today. You got to take the series against the Giants. You have to take the series against the Rockies. Because in my mind, this is a team who can maybe win the wild card. I'm not talking like just slide in at number two. They can be the number one wild card because I don't necessarily foresee them beating the LA Dodgers in the NL West. But if you're going to fight the Dodgers in the NL West, you have to beat the Padres, the Giants, and the Rockies. That's a given right now. And this team has proved that they can do that. Once you move past these next two series, you have the Mets, then three series against the Dodgers. After that, it's one of the easiest schedules remaining in the MLB. The issue, of course, is the dog days of baseball. I talk about it all the time. Jordan Hamm will mention it on the Diamonds in the Desert podcast, everything Arizona Diamondbacks on sports360az.com. When you're in the middle of that season, when you're playing, you know, what game are we on, number 98 or so? Eventually in summer, you get to that point where you're just like, holy cow, we are not halfway through the season, and it is 120 degrees outside. No, not yet. Nonetheless, it's tough at that point to keep your team together in a season as long as the MLB. But with a schedule as mellow, if you will, that this team is going to have, you need to step up. You need to have spots where you step up over the course of summer and over the course of those dog days in order to stay in the NL West in the wild card hunt. I guess this team is actually ready for that because, well, quite frankly, they've been good so far this year. I mean, I don't want to call them great because they're on a four-game skid right now, but a win against the Padres and maybe you sweep the Giants, you go on a four-game winning streak into a four-game series against the Rockies, that means something when you're in the month of May going into June. Trying to stay hot is going to be a very tough thing. I do want to mention, though, real quick, the AAA affiliate of the Arizona Diamondbacks. My brother is in love with. I have no idea why my brother loves the Reno Aces. I mean, yeah, they actually do. It's a cool name. They have some good logos and stuff like that. My family are logo freaks. We love graphics and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, have you ever been to Reno Aces game? By the way, I live with them. I know the answer. The answer is no. He's like, no, but it doesn't matter. I love the Reno Aces. Name one player. And he's like, I don't care. I like them. I'm like, well, okay, I'll give you that. There's a reason to love the Reno Aces. Whew, they have set the world on fire these past couple days. A 25-8 win against the Tacoma Rainers. Rainers. Triple A. Nonetheless, 25 runs, and the guy leading the pack was Yasmani Tomas, who's down in the AAA affiliate right now, went 5-for-6, 8 RBIs, 4 runs scored, and not to mention, of course, more than 3. I mean, you can call it a hat trick. He had over 3 home runs. Also a note, someone hit in the cycle for the Aces in that 25-8 routing. So, I'm kind of a fan of the Reno Aces because they have that Arizona affiliation, and they're usually pretty good. One last thing I want to get into before we head into the break, though, is some design, some architectural pictures that were accidentally released over the course of the weekend that has everyone kind of either up in arms or this is a huge talking point in sports radio across the West Coast because the Arizona Diamondbacks accidentally did not release, but the architectural group that they were with accidentally released leaked images of a proposed stadium view of what could be the next Arizona Diamondbacks stadium. Now, they're at Chase Field right now through 2022, but do have the option to go and look around at other locations to build a ballpark. Here's the first look of what a leaked image will be. First of all, the first thing that I noticed is no roof, which in Arizona seems very strange. But when you look at some of the other pictures, it actually does have a retractable roof on rails that slides over the stadium. And and there's a concourse right there. You know, obviously I'm super intrigued because I love a beautiful architecture, and what is being made right now for sports venues, especially groups like the football stadium in Los Angeles, those are beautiful stadiums. What you're looking at right now, that's not even the stadium. That's out and about around the stadium. And now I want you to have one more picture. You can kind of see that retractable roof there. It's actually on rails. I guess the idea there is that it expands. But something that everyone is noting is the landscape around it is very rocky, mountainous. It's almost like it's going to be like ASU's Wells Fargo Arena, and also the football field, Sun Devil Stadium, are kind of like right in that mountain. It almost looks like the idea for this architectural venue stadium is in the middle of a mountain, and people are very curious as to where this may be. And of course, the ideas still are kind of by Phoenix Rising off the 202, or a lot of people are questioning if maybe this is going to be around South Mountain. And for people like me, I live down in the Northwest Valley. It's hard enough sometimes to get downtown. It's hard enough for anyone around the state of Arizona to get downtown in traffic if you're not already living in Phoenix to go to a D-backs or a Suns game. If you move the D-backs, as I'm sure that they want to due to continuous feuds with Maricopa County, and the fact that the stadium is getting old for MLB standards, moving away, you know, it doesn't help me because now it's further away. Now it could kind of help because if you just take the 101 around, it's actually sometimes faster than going into downtown Phoenix. But in a way, you alienate those customers, those people who want to take in baseball on the other side of Phoenix. That being said, people in Prescott, Tucson, and Flagstaff are like, quit your whining. We can't get to it no matter where it is in the Phoenix metro area, so forget about that. And not to mention the Coyotes and the Cardinals are based out in Glendale and the Northwest Valley as well, which is near me at least, so I get to go see those kinds of games without much hassle. And that, of course, alienates the Southeast, Mesa, and groups like that. So, as much as you want to be downtown, downtown is expanding so much, and it's really kind of growing out of its brinks, it seems like. What really always disappoints me about stadium moving is the fact that now there's going to be a giant empty baseball stadium if the D-backs decide to move from Phoenix. And I do want to note that all of these designs and stuff, they don't necessarily exist because they're not necessarily real. They were leaked images from one of the groups consulting with the Diamondbacks. The D-backs are also getting graphics right now and different looks at what it could look like to be a remodernization, if you will, of the current Chase Field. And now this all came from AZ Snake Pit. They found the images on this website, asked the architects in an email, hey, can you elaborate? And then they're quickly deleted, as in, oh, whoops, that wasn't supposed to be there. So, is it going to happen? There's a chance that it doesn't. Go back and look at what the Arizona Coyotes were planning to be with Arizona State. It didn't end up happening. So, while on one hand, I absolutely love these new stadiums because they are just absolutely beautiful works of art, it's also like, man, it's going to be a lot of money to tear down Chase Field or to reutilize that area in downtown Phoenix. That's going to suck for Phoenix, and it sucks for guys like me out on the west side going, I don't want to drive all the way southeast for a four-hour baseball game. At the end of the day, though, this is business. This is how everything works when it comes to the world of sports. So while on one side, there's a boatload of negatives for any teams moving cities, whether it be just a few miles or states. But on the other side, continuous growth and innovation and doing new things is so much fun for residents of the state of Arizona to one day go to a brand new, almost $1 billion baseball park. You know, granted, it's probably going to be some expensive tickets, but there's always goods and bads to be accounted for when you come to this kind of situation. But at the end of the day, look towards those goods because they can very much so be the better part of the future of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and even maybe you taking your kiddos or something to the Arizona Diamondbacks games. That's going to progress, unfortunately, for the Diamondbacks throughout the year, I think. This is going to keep getting brought up while they're trying to outweigh the odds all year long, so that's going to be a little disappointing for them to have to deal with this. But nonetheless, I'm excited for what the future holds for the Coyotes, the D-backs, the Suns, anyone, whether they're in a feud with Glendale or Phoenix or Maricopa, whatever. You know, at the end of the day, stuff ends up getting done, And as a consumer, yeah, surgeries kind of helpful most of the time. So we'll keep looking at it. Obviously, nothing official yet, but we'll keep looking and watching and enjoying what's going on right now in the state of Arizona. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit Phoenix Suns. And also, University of Arizona softball heading to the Super Regionals. We'll talk more about that coming up next. In the nation, or I guess no longer because they're gone thanks to Arizona. First game was a 2-1 squeeze out. The second game was a 12-3 blowout that ended up giving Arizona now into the NCAA Super Regionals. So essentially, here's how it works, guys. Arizona will take on Ole Miss. They are the sixth seed. Unless Kentucky beats Washington, Washington will have the home series next if Arizona defeats Ole Miss. But this is a three-game series that will take place in Tucson. Speaking of Tempe, though, the Arizona Sun Devils unfortunately lost to Alabama, lost to them twice, but ASU 33-18. Arizona was 42-12 going into these games, and softball in the state of Arizona is growing so large. I cover a lot of softball for the high school sports, and it's really starting to blow up just kind of like football is, except it's not the sport of football. Some great D1 offers across the state of Arizona. You have athletes staying in state, and now the top two schools in Arizona when it comes to athletics have both their softball teams in regionals. Last year, ASU was in super regionals. This year, Arizona is in super regionals. It almost looks like that if you are an elite softball player in Arizona, you have two phenomenal options right in front of your face here in the state of Arizona. So I just find this absolutely phenomenal for the state of AZ. And looking at how Arizona has gotten here, when your top five pitchers are pitching under an ERA of 2, and not to mention they have all made 5 or more appearances, all but one have made 10 or more appearances. That's impressive. That is extremely impressive. Their ace, Taylor McQuillan, has 31 appearances, 27 starts, and an ERA of just 1.54. This Arizona Wildcat team has not given up more than 6 runs in a single game. The defense for Arizona is what has gotten them to where they are, and not to mention, you know, they've had some good bats here and there when you beat number 24 Auburn by 9 runs, scoring 12 runs. So this is something that I think is just really fun in Arizona that's not getting the kind of publicity that I think it deserves. They'll be playing Ole Miss in a 3-game series in Tucson. It will also be on ESPNU and ESPN2 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 4 o'clock and 5 p.m. first pitches. Be sure to be on the lookout for that, guys. One last thing I want to get into before we go nationally is going to be the Phoenix Suns. I just want to touch on this real quick because since it's the offseason and there's, I guess, nothing to talk about. There are now trade rumors of Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans because he doesn't like the atmosphere of the Pelicans going on. So apparently he's going to be on the Suns. So let's count them up now, guys. So Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton are on this team. Supposedly in free agency, we are going to get D'Angelo Russell, Kevin Durant, and Anthony Davis. That's the rumors right now. And all of them, SB Nation put out an article that Anthony Davis of the Suns makes more sense than you think. There's a good chance of that because I don't think it's going to happen at all. So it might make a little bit more sense than maybe what I'm thinking because in my mind, guys, just because Monty Williams is the coach does not mean that he's going to bring Kevin Durant and Anthony Davis to this team in free agency. What I would like the Suns to do, if this is at all possible, we know that the front office has been a mess about the past decade, is getting this young talent that they already have here, Josh Jackson, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Dragan Bender, among others, are still on this team. If you build them up, you can be a Golden State Warriors kind of team. Whoa, Devin! Clickbait! Okay, calm down. So, what I mean by this is if you look at the Golden State Warriors starting lineup in Game 4 against the Portland Trail Blazers, Jordan Bell, Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, and Klay Thompson were 4 of those 5. The 6th man was Kevon Looney. All 5 of them were drafted by the Golden State Warriors. The other starter on that team, McKinney, it's only his second year in the league. He played like a handful of games last year, and now he's a starter on the Golden State Warriors without Kevin Durant and DeMarcus Cousins. What people forget about the Warriors and now their fifth straight finals appearance is that this is a homegrown team. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green were the superstars of those first couple titles. They started their careers in Golden State. They've only played for the Golden State Warriors. Bogut has been around here and there. Andre Iguodala was supposed to be a bust, and then he came onto the Warriors and made a difference. There are ways to surround Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton around talent and be a championship-contending team in the span of a few years. How do I know that? Because that's what the Golden State Warriors have done, and if they lose to Marcus Cousins and Kevin Durant in this offseason, they might just do it again. You never know. So we'll see how patient the Phoenix Suns are in terms of working with this young talent along with blowing this team along. But I do want to talk more about the NBA playoffs. The NBA Finals are coming on up, even though Toronto and Milwaukee are tied at 2 apiece. The Golden State Warriors are going 5 in a row now to the NBA Finals behind, like I mentioned, guys like Curry, Thompson, Green. And then two guys who, if you're not a big basketball fan, you never heard of Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell. I guarantee it. If you've never watched basketball that much before besides the playoffs. And that is how this team is winning games without Kevin Durant. Does Kevin Durant come back for the finals? Maybe. Does Marcus Cousins come back for the finals? Maybe. Does Andre Iguodala come back for the finals? Maybe. And it's a completely different starting lineup. Not to mention it could potentially be a sweep. But would it? We're going to talk to ESPN Radio play-by-play Adam Amin about that coming up after the break on The Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back, everyone, to The Brad Sessmatt Show. Devin Henry along with you on this Wednesday. And to talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA playoffs, we welcome on to the show Adam Amin, ESPN Radio play-by-play for a lot of the NBA playoffs and then a bunch of other stuff, too. But we can get into that later. For now, let's talk about the Golden State Warriors sweeping the Portland Trail Blazers into their fifth straight finals appearance. And Adam, you've been following this team for a while, so since no one else can figure it out, I'll ask you, how do you beat the Golden State Warriors?
I think you need a versatile offensive lineup. I think you need a center who can run a little bit, or at least can stay with the transition break. And I think you have to be able to, at the very least, equal them from the three-point line. And you have to be able to limit some of these options. And the hardest part about everything we just talked about is that if Kevin Durant's healthy, and even when he's not, a lot of those boxes are hard to check against Golden State. So I think it's as difficult as that. I mean, this is a historic run that we're seeing, and I think this is one of those just very special groups of talent. You know, this is one of the most special assemblances of talent I think we've ever seen in the NBA. So it is really hard to beat them. They are beatable, but it is hard to beat them.
And I think, as you mentioned, that special group of talent, you can even include that in, let's say, the starting lineup from Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals that did not have Boogie Cousins, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala. I mean, the talent here, when they have supposedly three of their best, you know, five or six players out, for instance, and they're still going out and sweeping the Trailblazers, is there anything, you know, maybe unusual that we're not seeing on TV or hearing on radio that is impressing you about this run when they're supposed to be very short on the bench and in talent with all these guys out with injuries?
Yeah, I think it's just a flip of a switch. I mean, it happens so fast where all of a sudden these guys, you know, all having to become key contributors at a moment's notice. You know, Kevin Durant gets hurt at the end of Game 5 in the Houston series, and at that point, I think, you know, they've played maybe 8 or 9 games with Kevin Durant being the main focal point of the offense, really ever since Game 3 of the first round against L.A. So they had kind of shifted styles again. They had been a little bit more pass-heavy. They were still running a lot of ISO with Kevin Durant, but they were a little bit more pass-heavy. He was a big part of that. He was making a concerted effort to be a better passer. But then, come middle of that Clippers series, and it's 1-1, Kevin Durant started to take over. And all of a sudden, after 9 games of doing that, to switch back, revert to a completely different style, where you're doing less ISO, more ball movement, more player movement, the ball is in Steph Curry and Draymond Green's hands a lot more. to revert to that suddenly, that's what's probably the most impressive thing.
And on your spotting board, there's five names that I want to zoom in on, that being Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, Jordan Bell, and Kevon Looney. The one thing that all five of those guys have in common is that they've only played for one team in their career, the Golden State Warriors. In a way, this is almost a homegrown franchise to now their fifth straight NBA Finals appearance. We see teams try to do this when they're either tanking or rebuilding, where they have this young talent, they try to build parts around them, but somehow this Warrior team, who was supposed to be, quite frankly, a group of no ones when they came out of college, it seemed like, are now multi-time NBA champions. From your point of view, how do the Golden State Warriors do this with homegrown talent winning championships?
I mean, player development and player scouting, I think that's where it starts. Their assistant coaching staff is fantastic. You know, Bruce Fraser, Mike Brown, who's a long time, he's coached in a bunch of finals. He's been at high-level programs, high-level franchises, around high-level guys. He was LeBron's coach. He was the Lakers coach. Coach Collins, Jaren Collins. To have that level of understanding of the league, to have that type of pedigree on your bench. You know, Bruce Fraser is the one who's working with Stephen Curry constantly in pregame. These are really good coaches, and I think their staff is really strong. One of the best staffs, certainly, in the NBA. And then Bob Myers has been. Not a lot of guys who've been agents in the past, we've seen it with the Lakers and Rob Pelinka. They don't always necessarily have the best grasp of running an entire organization. And to see how Bob Myers has transitioned these careers and become one of the sought-after people now. We've heard a lot of rumblings about the Lakers should go after somebody like a Bob Myers. He's done a phenomenal job scouting and constructing and hiring and delegating in his time as a GM of the Warriors. So I think obviously this is a top-down thing. It starts at the top and it's been cultivated all the way through when Steve Kerr took over 5 seasons ago.
Now, I want to go back to the other side of the bracket, the Eastern Conference. Right now, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Toronto Raptors tied it to a piece in their series. We opened up talking about how do you beat the Golden State Warriors. Whether or not you think that these teams can do it or not, which of these two do you think has the best chance of going to the finals and matching up against Golden State to win an NBA Finals championship?
I would bet on Milwaukee more so than Toronto. I feel like one thing that Golden State has been really good at, and it would certainly be different with Kawhi than it would be with even a James Harden or a Damian Lillard or a CJ McCollum. Guys are a little bit smaller. I think it, with somebody like what Giannis Antetokounmpo does, Chris Middleton, who brings so much length, Malcolm Brogdon, who has gotten stronger in the last couple of years and is a really solid defender. I think they have the length and versatility, whereas, Toronto with Kawhi, as great as he is, as I was referring to earlier, Golden State has done a really good job of kind of taking certain things away from a key player. They did that well against Harden for a couple of stretches and key moments in that series against Houston. They did it against Damian Lillard for most of the series, getting the ball out of his hands as much as possible, and made it really difficult on him throughout the series. So I think Milwaukee has the tools and the versatility necessary to compete with both iterations of Golden State. Now, again, it's much harder with Durant to stop Golden State. As much of a mismatch as Giannis might be, Kevin Durant is probably the biggest mismatch in the NBA, playing small forward at basically 6'10" and shooting over every defender that he has seen in the playoffs. So I know it's harder, but it is possible, and I think Milwaukee is more suited to try to make it possible.
And let's say that Milwaukee does win the Eastern Conference Championship. We're going from Oakland to Milwaukee. How does travel affect, let's say it goes 5, 6, 7 games, how does that kind of travel affect these teams when it comes to playing the same guy for almost 2 weeks for a championship?
I think Golden State's used to it, obviously, having played Cleveland the last handful of seasons, getting the 4 in a row kind of around the same area. It's actually a little bit further to go to Milwaukee than it is to go to Cleveland, beg your pardon, than it is to go to Milwaukee from Golden State. So I think they're used to it. I think maybe it'll affect Milwaukee a little bit, just the time change. This will be the first real difficult travel that I think they'll be dealing with. You know, obviously having played Boston in the last, in the first round, or in the last round, beg your pardon, not playing Toronto, these are relatively easy flights and accustomed is one thing, but I think travel is just something that the Warriors are used to. I think we'll have to keep an eye on it for Milwaukee when they get to game three, especially depending on how long this series goes. If this series goes seven, which I think it's capable of going, and then they got, you know, at least they'll have a couple of games at home, you're still playing all the way through while Golden State's resting, and then you're going to have to travel after those first two games. We'll see how it affects.
And now, are you going to be a part of this ESPN radio crew going forward, doing some play-by-play in the NBA Finals this year?
No, I've never done the Finals. I've always called it after the Conference Finals, the excellent Mark Kestisher and the Hall of Famer Hubie Brown are currently doing the Milwaukee-Toronto series. They'll have their third straight call in the Finals. I'm off to Oklahoma City for some Women's College World Series.
Well, I do want to ask you about that. So I'm really curious. Can you compare the atmosphere between calling the Women's College World Series, the Women's College Basketball Championship, specifically the one 2 years ago, what you just did with the NBA Western Conference Finals, and the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest? You do all these different things. Can you compare championship environments, if you will, when you're on the play-by-play?
Yeah, they're all different. They're all unique. They're all fun in their own ways. I'm sure there's some detriments to all of them, but I mean, you know, being in Santa Clara for the college football championship game, to be on the field with a different perspective for that than I would be in the booth normally, that's unique. I think being at the Women's Final Four when you're sitting there courtside and, you know, you get to see some big moments and what a neutral, quote-unquote neutral crowd feels and sounds like when you get to the championship game and both fan bases are still pretty rabid. And it's a sellout crowd. I think that's got a great special feel. Places like Golden State, Portland, Denver, you know, I was in Orlando for the first playoff games in Orlando in 7 years. So to have the opportunity to see some of these different NBA arenas, be in the bigger cities rather than college towns, and kind of see what the colloquial feel of everything is for everybody, what the buzz of the town is like. I think they're all unique. I think, and again, I'm rattling all these off. You're sitting there with, you know, thousands of people at Nathan's while you're kind of literally in the middle of it, 25 feet away from the stage. That's got its own rabid feel for 10 minutes, you know, those 10 minutes that they're going at it. So, what the common thread is with all these, you know, they're all great in some way, and, you know, we're kind of stupidly lucky to be a part of all of them in some small way.
So after the Softball College World Series, what do you got going on this summer, Adam?
Usually try to take some time off, but you know, as soon as we get done with the World Series, you know, I'll try to take maybe three to 4 weeks away from everything. Try not to work too much. You know, we'll get a shot to go on a vacation at some point, probably going to Spain at some point during the summer, and then we'll pick it back up. You know, late June, early July with Major League Baseball. We'll get back into it starting the second half of the season. And then when we get to August, it's pretty much over after that. August means NFL preseason with the Bears and mixing in some MLB and then just getting ready for the pending college football and NFL season.
Swiss Army knife, if you will, of doing play-by-play for ESPN. Adam, thank you for your time as always, man. Great to have you on the show, and best of luck in the College World Series for softball coming up, man.
Appreciate it, thank you.
Thank you. That's Adam Amin, play-by-play for A Million Things on ESPN. We'll take one more break, and when we come back, we have Corey LaJoy, driver of the Go Fast Racing Ford Mustang. He will have Staff Sergeant Alex Conrad, a Chandler native, a graduate of Hamilton High School, who lost his life in the Army in 2018. His name will be on the windshield of Corey LaJoy's car for the Coke 600 this Memorial Day weekend. We'll talk to him about that coming up next year on the Bad Test Match Show. All right, Corey, you got me?
Yes, sir.
All right, awesome. So we'll do this here in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, everyone, to the Bad Sess Matt Show on Sports 360 AZ. This is the inside lane going inside a little bit of motorsports in the state of Arizona. The Coke 600 this weekend, well, of course, as well as the Indianapolis 500. Big Memorial Day weekend, as always, this time of year. Join us to get us ready for the weekend. He's the 2017 Little 600 champion, the 2014 K&M Pro Series East's runner-up, and a third-generation driver. It's the racer to go fast racing, number 32 Ford Mustang from Concord, North Carolina. Carolina. It's Corey LaJoy. Corey, thanks for joining me, man.
That was a hell of an introduction. Thanks for that.
Oh, I'm glad to, man. You know, you're a youngster. You'll get plenty more of those as the years go by, I'm pretty sure. But, of course, I want to get into the Coke 600 this weekend. As always, NASCAR Salutes has their 600 miles of remembrance. And this year, an Arizona name is going to be on the windshield of your car on the number 32. Staff Sergeant Alex Conrad from right here in Arizona, from Chandler, passed away back in 2018. And this weekend is so special in so many different ways. What is it like to have those real-life heroes riding along with you for 600 miles this weekend?
Yeah, it really is humbling to be able to carry, you know, Staff Sergeant Conrad's name on our cars, along with the other 39 guys that are riding along with us, you know, and the millions of others that have laid down their lives to protect our freedoms and allow us to ride around in circles and get paid for it, to put on a good show for all the great fans on Fox on Sunday night. But, you know, it definitely is humbling, and, you know, to be able to take, you know, Sergeant Conrad's family out to the track and show those guys a good time, something that they probably wouldn't dream they'd get, just in honor of their son. I look forward to doing that each and every year, to show our appreciation personally and as a sport to the military for all their sacrifices and what they do for us. So, it's a great show pre-race. They shoot cannons and flyovers and fireworks and the whole nine. So it's a pretty cool show to be a part of. And I think they're doing some sort of break lap three or something. I should know that, but I don't. they're doing some break to just as a moment of silence to remember all the ones that are falling, especially the ones that are riding along with us in the car. And I'm really looking forward to Sunday.
Right after stage two, there's going to be that moment of remembrance like we have on Memorial Day on Monday. And, of course, it's great to have the family of Sergeant Conrad out there as well. This is your first full season. You're signed with Go Fast Racing in the off season, but this is a strange kind of couple of weeks almost where everyone is home for the most part for 2.5 weeks, the All-Star Race and the Coke 600. Is there anything different that you kind of get to do in these 2 weeks that you are at home rather than usually you're home for 3-4 days and got to fly out to the next spot? Anything different going on that you don't get to do usually?
It is like a mini vacation just because, you know, we got all last week home and we got all this week home, and you get all this all next week. You get more there with the family or whatever you wanted to do, go to the lake, and then you turn around and go to Pocono next Thursday. So we're essentially home for 2.5 weeks, which is more than we usually get. Like you said, you're only home, you know, Monday through Wednesday usually, and then you're back on the road. So it's definitely a little bit of a break, but then we load up for the longest race of the year here on Sunday for 600 miles. It's a mental test as well as it is a physical test, and it's supposed to be about 95 degrees. So be super hot, and it'll definitely separate the men from the boys, I'm thinking.
And this is the inside lane time. Corey LaJoy, the driver of the number 32 Go Fast Racing Ford Mustang, and you yourself co-host a podcast on MRN. That's Sunday Money. Now, I'm really curious. You kind of talked about some of your fellow drivers. Do you ever get any kind of lip back? Any smack talk coming back from your podcast? Or do you even know if any of you guys listen when you come back to the racetrack on the weekend?
I don't know if those guys listen or not. I'm sure that they probably would give me some talk back, but I don't really care. You know, I just try to say it how it is. You know, everybody's so vanilla that doesn't really say it how it is because they're worried about hurting anybody's feelings anymore. So I'll tell how it is, how my opinion of it is, and, you know, I tell some of the behind-the-scenes stories that somebody wouldn't normally hear on the broadcast. So we have a lot of fun with it. Yeah, it's on all the places where you can listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, or whatever it is, in the podcast section, Sunday Money, and we talk about some current event stuff, but we have a lot of fun with it.
You got a busy day coming up all day on Wednesday, today, and then, of course, throughout the week, so I'll let you on in a minute, but I do want to do a segment with you. I do with all of our drivers. It's called Quick Time, some rapid-fire questions. I'm looking for some rapid-fire answers in return. Corey, ready to take a quick time?
Quick time.
So, first question, what is your favorite track to race at regardless of car and why?
Bristol, because it's just the last great Coliseum. You know, it's fast, and you get your elbows up and get the job done.
Name every driver that's had their Daytona 500 car display their own face on the hood.
Only one, that's me.
That's you. Okay, I'll give you a harder one here. Who has the most top fives in Little 600 history?
I'm assuming it's me, maybe.
You're close. You're actually tied for third with five drivers. I'll give you one more guess. There's two answers here, actually.
I don't know.
It's Joey Logano, which, I mean, he hasn't raced a Little 600 in a long time, but then also Ryan Truex. They're tied with three at the top of the board.
Well, so I run third last night, so I think that puts me tied for them.
Yeah, you're on the podium. I was trying to look back. I think that you got two, but hey, at the very least, you know what those guys don't have that you do? A win.
Yeah.
Last question for you, and I'll... What was that?
It's almost a crapshoot out there anymore because you know, you get some kids in there that try to make it a vendetta to beat the Cup guys, so they try to wreck you as soon as they get to you.
I'll give you one more question. This one might be the hardest. Between you, your dad, and your grandfather, all race car drivers, who's the best race driver of all you?
I never saw my grandpa race in person, but he was pretty successful. He never did it as a sheer job. I would love to see him race in person because I hear a lot of good things about him. But honestly, any race car driver thinks that they're the best one in any conversation. So I think it'd be a hell of a race. I'll put it that way. But I'd like to think that I can come out as much as I've learned in the last couple of years being a Cup driver. I feel like I could probably have a leg up now.
I like that answer. Corey, thank you for being with us here on the Inside Lane. Can't wait to see that red, white, and blue number 32 carrying Staff Sergeant Alex Conrad's name on there. Thank you once again to you and your team for carrying the Arizona native this weekend in the Coke 600.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Corey. That is the Inside Lane here on Sports 360 AZ. Check out Sports360AZ.com for all the episodes of the Inside Lane. All right, Corey, thanks, man. I'll let you go. Have a great week, and best of luck to you this weekend, buddy.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Will do, man. Thanks again.
All right, Corey, he's going to go hang up that line so we can keep going on here, but...
This weekend, we got more on his story and how his name was chosen to be ran this weekend in the Coke 600 on Sports360AZ.com. Once again, huge thank you to Corey LaJoy and talking with us here on Sports 360 AZ, and also Christy King for helping us set that up here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. One last thing before I let you go, it's about the Indy 500. Now, this is a big fad kind of thing. People just like to be like, yeah, I like racing. Oh, really? Who's your favorite driver? I don't know. I just watched the Indy 500, man. So anyway, if you're one of those guys, I don't blame you. That's cool. I'm totally cool with that. If you want to just go watch the Indy 500, it's one of the greatest races in the world, hands down, regardless of what kind of car it is. But if you don't know who the heck is in the race and you're like, I'm just watching a bunch of cars going around because I'm cool, let me give you someone who you should be rooting for, whether or not you actually do know a lot about IndyCar, a little bit about IndyCar, absolutely nothing about IndyCar, and that is Pippa Mann. Now, this is someone who, last year, she was so close to making the Indianapolis 500 and was bumped out at the very last second in qualifying and did not make the race. This year, she wasn't going to have a ride until two dirt track guys, Clausen Marshall Racing, asked her to drive their car. Now, what is on her car is something very extraordinary. It is remembering the life of both Brian Clausen and Jason Johnson, two, most people just say race car drivers, but two amazing people, amazing human beings who lost their lives in racing accidents. They are being represented on this car, and along with them being represented on this car, also is Women in Motorsports is on this car, a great cause, and not to mention the big one, the primary sponsor, Driven to Save Lives, and what that is a group that is raising awareness for organ donors. For instance, Brian Clausen was an organ donor when he passed away after his accident and saved the lives of other people, donating his heart and other parts and other organs in his body that ended up helping other people live their lives even after Brian had unfortunately left us. So This is just, there's no way to not look at Pippa Mann and her story and the stories of the owners of this car and the stories that are on this car and not just go, man, wouldn't it just be amazing to watch that car win the Indianapolis 500? So be on the lookout for the 39BC Pippa Mann in the Indy 500 this weekend and give her and that that Clausen Marshall team a big rooting in the Indianapolis 500. That'll do it here on Sports 360 AZ. Huge thank you to Adam Amin and also Corey LaJoy for joining us here. Brad Sesmat is back tomorrow. Keep on looking out here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Devin Henry.